Discussions with a Ajahn Suchen in Hoi An, Vietnam, February 2017. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Nina, Sarah, Jonathan, Gung, Dum, Graham, Lan, Sun, Vincent, and other Vietnamese friends.
First of all, I would like to say thanks for being here with us. And I'm very happy to be here too, together with the group, to have discussion on the Dharma. In the past Sunday, I spent some time in the pagoda, the meditation center actually. Not for practicing too much, but discussion with the teacher, master. He's always mentioned about living with the Buddha nature, living with that, on the current like seeing, hearing, touching with the Buddha nature. That, from my thinking, it is, that's quite a very high level of the one who can live in that way. Back to our study, my study from you teacher teaching, then I consider whether that is any mistake on that way or not.
What does it mean to live with Buddha nature?
In Vietnamese, that is tức là sống mà không có quên, tức là sống tỉnh giác cái gì, không có quên mình á, thì mình dịch tiếng Anh là not forgetful, not awareness of the realities.
For example, like now, as you know, and you mentioned, there is seeing or hearing. So at the moment of seeing, seeing sees visible object. Is it living with Buddha nature at the moment of seeing?
To be honest, from my understanding that discussed over the past time, I'm not sure whether we are talking about Buddha nature or not. But from my understanding, that is from discussion with him, that there is Buddha nature, and then Buddha nature's like awareness and not forgetful of recently reality. But for me, like what I understand that at the moment of seeing, hearing, it just arise and fall away by the condition. No good nature there. But I was there with some friends, a foreigner, and they also have joined a lot of discussion. And seem we also agree that he, the master, who can live somehow very in the mindfulness, and his mind quite very pure, and he can see things very clear. That is the thing that I can feel from the master.
If someone talked to me about living in the Buddha nature, just like if someone talks to me about meditation, I would want to ask them what they mean, because the term itself doesn't carry any specific meaning. It sounds good, but what does it mean? How is it different from what is happening now? And it's the same, I think, if someone talks about awareness of seeing and hearing and thinking. One would still want to ask further information, because, again, we all have different ideas about what awareness means and even what seeing means. So in order to clarify these things, we need to discuss further the meaning of the terms. Awareness of seeing, what is it? Because there's seeing most of the time during the day, but there's no awareness of it.
I think just like seeing, or seeing as it is, like in theory, I think it's just in theory, just seeing the visible object or hearing from the sound, just as it is, no thinking, no. Just, I'm not too sure, but that's what I think.
Right. Again, your question seems to be really about this particular meditation master, and of course, no one here can comment on that just from hearing that he talks about living in the Buddha nature. And no doubt you are impressed by his demeanor and things you've heard about him, but all of that is nothing in terms of the understanding that the Buddha taught. Understanding has to be developed by each person for themselves. The question is, what did the Buddha teach about the development of that understanding? What did the Buddha teach about awareness of seeing and hearing and touching and thinking? Because if we have no idea about that, then it's very easy to be impressed by someone who talks about those things without being specific.
And the Buddha taught that in order to know about someone's understanding or purity, one has to question and discuss a lot and also develop one's own understanding. Otherwise, impossible to know by someone's appearance what kind of understanding or what kind of purity. So if someone talks to me about, at this moment of seeing, being in the living in the Buddha nature, I would really question it a lot, because seeing now is just a vipaka citta, a result of karma. There isn't living in any kind of nature. It's just one citta, not my citta or your citta or anyone else's. It's just a moment of result of karma. And later, when there are kusala or akusala cittas, usually akusala cittas, at each moment of akusala, is that living in Buddha nature? So I would question it very carefully, and I wouldn't judge about someone's purity or awareness just from their manner or demeanor at all.
And it has to be at this very moment, only one moment, and it falls away immediately. So it's not a state, something that can stay. Like in Buddha's nature, it seems like a long time. It's impossible. So it has to be this, the characteristic of this moment, either visible object or seeing or hearing or sound or thinking a lot, or attachment or aversion, also akusala, anything that appears at this moment.
My friend also have the question that living in the daily life, there are a lot of defilement and wrong thinking, a lot of come after the moment of seeing, hearing or touching. Then how to live with the Buddha nature, how to live with as it is. Then the answers were just like living with the Buddha nature, then that is the replacement of the defilement or the a lot of thinking, just living at its ease and let's say think as it needs or do what it needs, whatever.
Who's the Buddha? Shall we begin from the very beginning? Because his teaching is so very, very subtle. It's not just listen and then understand instantly, but who's the Buddha? If you don't know him, how can you follow his word, do this or that? So who's he, the Buddha?
He is the enlightened one.
Enlightened what?
Enlightened the nature of the reality.
What do you mean by nature of reality?
Back to the theory, let's say the reality just like nama and rupa.
What is nama and what is rupa?
Namas need experience the object, can experience the
like
object.
What now, for like example?
I can hear the sound.
Hearing,
and seeing, like smell.
So every thinking. Word he taught is about reality, that which is so true in daily life, like now, right? That it's his enlightenment, not just Buddha nature or go somewhere or do something. But since no one can understand the truth of seeing, even there is seeing right now at all, but he had enlightened the truth of everything in daily life and everywhere, no matter in or out of this world. His virtue is so great, that's why he has compassion for everyone that who cannot know as him. That's why he taught for 45 years in details about what is now, in order for right understanding to understand it as it is. Is seeing I? Why you say that?
Because seeing arise by condition.
So daily life is like this. At moment when there's trouble, is it true? Troubleness in life, is it true? Unhappy moment, is it true?
Yeah, it is true.
So what would you do?
Cannot do anything. Not living. At the moment, right?
You live. You just want to live with Buddha nature, or see, no understanding at all. What is it? But each word of Buddha make known reality right now as it is, as no one can make it arise at all. Each moment is conditioned, not at will, not I will do this or I will do that. That's not right understanding. It's the wrong understanding, taking everything for I and me and mine. So it begins with understanding clearly each word of the Buddha, in order to have more and more understanding who's he, who's the enlightened one, and what was enlightenment. Can there be enlightenment now? Can there be enlightenment now?
I think it could be in the future, but now maybe not.
Ignorance cannot understand anything at all. It's like a wishing moment to have such and such moment, but don't conditions for anything to arise at will. They all arise by conditions. Can you make anything arise? When one is in trouble, unhappiness, unhappy, could you do anything that will bring about that you like to have? So why do such and such without understanding that which now is not self? The absolute sense of suffering is the arising and falling away of whatever, like now. Seeing, if it does not arise, there would be no seeing. There's no seeing at all, impossible. Now hearing is conditioned. Hearing arises just to hear. That's why we call hearing, not seeing, not thinking. Why not learn to understand that which appears no matter what?
I think most of the... okay, back to myself, not talk about people. Loba, want to go quicker. And
so what to
hearing,
do?
Yeah.
What to do?
From my understanding that we cannot do anything.
So listen more to the teachings, yes, about Lopa, that everything is uncontrollable.
Yes. So could you please just go back to my question, please? Because more of the meditation master in Vietnam talking about the Buddha nature.
So what is it you better ask the
that
person?
That is the concern, my concern and confused as well, because
I don't mind
meditation.
Who's who, because I listen to the Buddha, because he taught that which nobody can know by oneself at all. And by listening, one can consider what's right and what's wrong and what's true or not, what is beneficial and what is not beneficial. Not just think that these people say this and that people say that. And what about Buddha's word? So, can you say more about Buddha nature?
Actually, that is the very high level of the one who can live with that.
And what's that?
That is like non-forgetfulness, or the awareness of the reality, whatever happened right now, right
How
here.
How can awareness arise?
Because I'm not the one who get that. So I cannot
mind those words which do not bring any understanding at all.
Yeah, I can reflect on that, but still, because, you know, understand for me, because, you know, from beginning I follow a lot of that, and all of the teacher who talking about that, and I try to follow, but seem is impossible to reach. And that's the reason why I am very happy when hearing about the discussion here, and I feel that it's more less about the reality, about the truth, than whatever I go in the past. But still need time to consider, not very quick follow, because I hear I can understand a little bit, but to be honest, I cannot, let's say, I realize the realities and the moment of the nama happened very quick. I cannot realize that and need time, right? And even for the Buddha teaching, also read time to time, read a little bit, because for studying in the monastery or in the meditation center, not reading the sutta much, not reading much.
That's why the Buddha said that there needs to be the hearing of the teachings over and over again, repeatedly, not just enough to hear it once, because we hear it and it makes sense to us and we think it's the truth, but then we go away and we hear something different and it confuses us. So there has to be a lot of hearing and a lot of reflection on what has been heard. Confidence in the teachings, in the correct aspect of the teachings, can only be based on awareness and understanding that has been developed. So until there is a proper foundation, there cannot be the confidence not to be swayed by other teachers and other interpretations of the teaching. But the path taught by the Buddha, as Ajahn has been explaining, is a path of understanding what is appearing at the present moment. So if someone tells us that the defilements that are arising in daily life need to be replaced by Buddha nature or by whatever, it should be a red flag to us, a question mark, whether this is the teaching of the Buddha or not. Because as we understand it, the Buddha taught that if there are defilements arising in daily life, the path is the understanding of those defilements as they arise. If there is awareness and understanding, awareness can take any reality as object.
And I think it's fantasy land when there is the idea that after seeing or hearing that somehow there can be kusala all the time, or that there can be continual awareness, or as you say, namas arise and fall away very quickly and they can all be known and whatever. So if someone talks about being aware all the time, it's not right, it's not realistic, because it's impossible. Even though the Sotapanna or the Anagami doesn't have kusala all the time or awareness all the time, moments of seeing and hearing, these are vipaka cittas, and afterwards the subtle defilements come in instantly, like even now during a Dhamma discussion, so many moments of attachment and ignorance completely unknown. And when one wishes so much to have kusala all the time or awareness all the time, what is the reality? It's clinging to oneself, wishing to have Buddha nature or wishing to have kusala all the time, not being truthful to understand reality as it's being conditioned, uncontrollable. So the path is not to have kusala all the time or awareness all the time, but to understand whatever appears, no matter it's seeing, hearing, like, dislike, kusala, akusala, with detachment. Otherwise, it's not the path of understanding with detachment when one tries so hard to be aware all the time. So if someone talks to me about being aware all the time, I will know it's not the right path.
And I also think that when we talked about the Buddha nature, what is that? Because anyone can think anything about that, and everyone has different ideas. But as we learn from the Buddha's teaching, then everything is very precise, because the Buddha has enlightened to all realities. So when someone say that we live in the Buddha nature, what does that mean? And does that mean that Buddha nature is a reality? Is it conditioned or is it not conditioned? If is it conditioned, can we live with that as a self, or?
I'm not sure I understand correctly what they teach. But from my understanding that the Buddha nature is something that not cannot say something that it cover everything and is
unconditioned.
Which is the unconditioned reality that the Buddha taught about? Only one.
Let me clarify again. I'm not sure whether I understand correctly what they teach, but from my a little understanding that the Buddha nature is not unconditional, that is purified and no past, no future, just cover the not.
But the Buddha nature is not in the teachings, so how can you expect to understand the meaning of it? It's not in the text. It's not a term that the Buddha used. It's not a term that appears in the commentaries. So if someone is teaching Buddha nature as the Buddha's teaching, it's meaningless unless it's explained in detail.
I think, as Nina suggested, there's the idea of something lasting or something beneath the surface. Sometimes some sutta, like the Luminous Sutta, is misread, and there's an idea that actually if the superficial akusala is removed, really the mind is pure all the time, but it's not seen as pure because of some dirt or some defilements, but underneath it is pure all the time. But this is completely wrong. The Buddha didn't teach this. He taught actually the mind is very dirty most of the time. There's no underlying purity or goodness at all. And actually, no citta lasts for more than an instant. So at a moment of akusala, at a moment of lobha, there's no underlying purity or Buddha nature to be found. Because only ever one citta at a time in life, nothing lasts, nothing stays for an instant. And even when there's a moment of wholesomeness or kusala, at a moment of kindness or moment of understanding, it doesn't last for an instant. It's not your kindness or understanding or mine, nothing to cling to or try to have for oneself. So I think that the idea of Buddha nature, as you explain it or other people explain, is actually the idea of utter not understanding conditioned reality, which lasts for an instant falls away completely.
Let's talk a little more and consider more about the word Buddha's nature. Was it different from the other's nature?
From the other nature is the impermanent. But the Buddha nature is not impermanent.
What about his seeing?
The seeing, the seeing just arrive to see, but for the seeing...
Is it not his nature, seeing?
From my understanding that from the Buddha nature, where the seeing can arise to see the visual object.
For
similarly,
everyone, for everyone, for only him.
Everyone the same.
So seeing is Buddha's nature or everyone's nature?
Everyone.
If there is no consideration, there wouldn't be any understanding of what is heard, even one word, like Buddha's nature. See? So, who will follow that which one does not understand? Follow blindly, not knowing what it's meant. So now, what's Buddha's nature?
Okay, I think I got the point. I think I got the point.
I mean that anyone he would like to follow, to live Buddha's nature, should consider a lot in order to really understand whether it's wrong or right to do that, because no understanding even what's the Buddha's nature. So please think over it, consider it. What's the Buddha's nature? Seeing
yes,
is not, hearing is not. So what was his nature?
Actually, seeing, hearing is part of the Buddha nature. From understanding from that theory, right? Then
is which is not the Buddha's word at all.
Yeah.
So it's useless to listen to anyone who hasn't enlightened to be Buddha, Samma Sambuddha, by himself. Would you like to know Buddha's nature? Yeah, very interesting, because many people think about that.
Yeah, many people think about that. And for me, because I already been in a long time with practicing, with study what I heard, then seem I cannot touch anything.
Excuse me?
And very...
Can
for me, it, for me, it seem I cannot touch
but
at
can,
least very low level of that.
Yeah, but can you know the difference between even one word of Buddha and the other's word?
Yeah, this is more worth value for me for right here. Very value for me for understanding, listen to the teaching and the word of the Buddha.
So what's the most precious in your life? Most precious thing in your life.
Most valuable.
Valuable.
The understanding.
So each word should be understood. Even it's so very difficult, so subtle, but it's so true that it takes time to develop understanding from hearing to direct understanding until realizing the truth of it. So now, what's the Buddha's nature?
That is difficult for me. So that is wrong idea of the reality.
Can we say that the more understanding there is of different realities, the more understanding there is about what is Buddha's nature in truth? So Ajahn is asking, okay, like now, seeing, we can say seeing is Buddha's nature or anyone's nature, because there must be moments of seeing and hearing and other cittas which are the result of karma. So this is one thing. And what else? What else is
I think
Buddha's
nature? The thing that you mentioned, cittas arise and fall away in Bursak and totally terminate at its moment, so nothing can constantly run through the life, and at that point can say that the idea is of the Buddha and nature seem not correct. It's not correct. I think at that point it's easy.
And what were the qualities of the Buddha that he was able to teach us about all these different realities, like the fact that these different realities and rise and fall away instantly and are not yours or mine, and one after the other in rapid succession, as you've said. So what were the great qualities of the Buddha that has made it possible for us to discuss the truth now?
Can anyone live with Buddha's nature?
So, because after the discussion, the Buddha nature is for us here, right? We say that it's wrong idea of the Buddha nature is the wrong word. You
the think. Truth.
Then the truth is no.
What's the Buddha's nature? The truth of the Buddha's nature?
The reality. I think so.
No one can be compared to his great wisdom, his great virtue, and his great compassion. So no one can live with Buddha's nature at all. Only him. But anyone sees. But what about understanding of seeing? Not at all. But he enlighten all realities. Nothing's left. No matter what appears now. Buddha thought about each reality as it is, as a reality, because it's real. Seeing, if it does not arise, if seeing does not arise, nothing now appears, because it's visual object which can be seen. Not can be touched, not can be heard. No matter who knows or not, it's conditioned to arise to see. This is the meaning of all dhammas are anatta. No self, uncontrollable. But the wisdom of the other is not as great as Buddha, so no one can live like that. If anyone thinks that I will live like him, right or wrong? Impossible. Seeing is seeing. Seeing arises and falls away. What about his great wisdom about seeing and the others? So, will you follow the Buddha's nature anymore?
Without worrying about how much we've managed to develop over the years of study, because you mentioned about the fact that you'd been studying for a long time and you felt you're still at a very low level, and then earlier you were wondering about the possible attainments of the meditation master who talks about Buddha nature. So I perceive there's maybe a sense here on your part that there should be more understanding But we have to be true to ourselves as to the level of our own understanding. And one is always going back to the beginning and starting again. And it starts with the reality of the present moment.
And what does the meditation master say about now?
Say about now, you mean the reality, the current moment, at the moment, at the present moment? Then master say that just live with as it is. No.
How?
I don't know, because just the...
Doesn't anyone now live with as it is?
Because I am not the one who live with that. And he say he could live with that. Then, wait a second. Then, sorry for that. And the one more point for the theory in the meditation part, that for people there is many level, kind of level actually. I don't know how to say in English, but one have a great capacity, great capabilities, and get quicker to get enlightened, then the other one can go longer and longer. That the other point as well.
We were having a discussion last night about meditation practice and how they are conducted and how there are different stages of progress and levels of expertise in carrying out the technique and so forth. So this is something that is common, I think, to all such ideas. But is it what the Buddha taught? We always have to come back to what did the Buddha teach about the present moment? Did he teach that it's to be understood? Or did he teach that one should follow a technique of some kind in order to have more wholesomeness or develop understanding or whatever? His teaching is a teaching about the way things are, not of what a person should be doing. He explained to his listeners the way the world is, the way the present moment is, the reality of the present moment. He explained what that reality is for someone who is well developed, who has already developed the path, but he didn't tell anyone to do anything.
During the discussion, he has the path, he has the way to practice. He said that he don't agree about the sitting meditation. Is the correct way, but it needs for beginner who can empower the patient, empower the capability of concentration. Just for the very beginning, the sitting meditation, and then
that is the first step.
To the master. That is for the first step, and then the second step. For the first step, the mind become calmer. I'm not saying that nothing, not thinking much, but calmer and stronger. In patient, a lot of better. And then the second step, he will check by making condition come, like make the monks to be anger, make the monk a lot of thing come, to live with with the movement, with the mobilities, with the thing coming, make him anger with the calm. And then the third step is to live with Buddha nature, to live with when we need to be
The problem is that it's all wrong, the wrong path right from the beginning, and that's just getting more and more wrong. Like in the beginning, if there is the idea that one has to sit and there has to be more concentration and more patience and so on and so on, it's all the idea of self. I should have more concentration, I should have more patience, and how can I have more concentration, more patience, how can I control realities? No understanding at all, because there's concentration now at each moment by conditions arising and falling away. Most of the time it's wrong concentration. So if there's the idea of sitting quietly and concentrating and trying to be patient, it's not any understanding at all of conditioned realities like seeing now, hearing now, attachment, aversion. It's trying to control life, trying to control realities, making conditions for this or that. It's not understanding the nature of Dhammas, realities that arise by their own conditions, not by the master or by someone else. So if there's no understanding now of what the Buddha taught, there can't be any understanding now of what Buddha nature means. And so by following a wrong practice, more and more wrong, it's getting further and further away from understanding the qualities of the Buddha.
Is that the master's great compassion to help people to understand by sitting? Like Buddha, out of his great compassion, he knew that it's so very difficult, even they're seeing right now, to understand seeing that it's not me, it's not I, it's condition. No matter in how many times in this life or whatever lives have passed, this world is just like this, never change, but it depends on the understanding of the person who hears it, how much it begins to see the truth, that no one can condition seeing or anything at all. It's by condition and not only seeing. Whatever arises in one's life, any life, by conditions. Without the teachings of the Buddha, no way to have less attachment to seeing and whatever in life as I, things, or me, myself. What is great compassion? It has to be with great wisdom. Without great wisdom, it's not compassion, because that is the right way. Not knowing anything, just sit. How can sitting bring about understanding? Because now we're sitting. Should we meditate now? Not talking about the truth, which is the word, the teachings of the Buddha. No one else. So many people heard this kind of teaching, other kinds of meditation teachings, but it depends on who follow that or who see that it's useless. It's nonsense. There is seeing, why not talk about seeing? There is hearing, why not help the other to understand that actually it's conditioned and arising and falling away in split seconds. That's why it's so very difficult to even begin to see the use of understanding it as not self. Because from birth to death, no self at all. But the ignorance and clinging takes everything from me from birth to death. If there is no understanding of the teachings of the Buddha about realities, the truth of reality. So shall we meditate? no understanding, just sitting, and do just move the hand or part of the body, standing, walking without any understanding at all. At that moment, what motivates such deeds or action, no matter sitting, to what? To know what? To understand what? Nothing. Just wanting to sit. Wishful thinking that there will be Buddha. But you can't live with Buddha. See?
And you mentioned the meditation master testing the student by quick movement to see if there was any reaction or disturbance. And that is similar to something, again, we were discussing last night about people under another meditation course where the person tries to avoid reacting to outside stimuli such as mosquitoes and so forth. So what is, do you think is being tested at that moment by the meditation master?
I think that's at that level is to, like what he said, living with calm in the normal life.
So what quality in the student is being tested by the master at that moment?
The level of calm of the mind developed.
So not understanding. It's not a test of understanding. So when does development of understanding begin?
Because, and what is the test of understanding? Because do we need tests to understand? Would we like anyone to test us to know what we know? Why not we ourselves know?
We want to understand.
Tested
for that theory that a teacher tests the student randomly, not the student doesn't know anything.
So what's the way to test the other's understanding?
I just heard the story.
No, this is not about the story.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe not.
And if I wave like this or I wave like this and one react and one doesn't react, does that really mean there is calmness at that moment? Maybe there's attachment to not reacting, who knows?
Actually not just
different
like
cheaters.
That's simple, right? Because I say, for example, shout out someone but without any mistake, something like that, to check about the mind. Just an example, not just something like it to see or react. But
it doesn't matter, but in any case, it's not any understanding of reality.
Yeah, sure. I think I
if
got
there's
the
no
point.
Understanding now about seeing or hearing, no matter someone shouts or doesn't shout, no matter there's one seems or looks very calm or doesn't, even so, there's no understanding right from the very beginning.
Sure.
If there is right understanding, one won't follow this practice.
And it doesn't actually test calmness. It doesn't test kusala of any kind. Because a person can develop that kind of resolve not to be affected by outside stimuli. You know, by if they think it's valuable, they can develop it. But doesn't mean anything to do with kusala. Because concentration can be either wholesome or unwholesome. Concentration per se is neither wholesome nor unwholesome, right? Concentration per se is a quality that is neither wholesome nor unwholesome in its nature. It is just concentration, and if the consciousness is wholesome, then it's wholesome concentration. If the consciousness is unwholesome, it's unwholesome concentration. So resolving not to be affected by outside stimuli has nothing to do with the development of kusala or calm.
So, well, I've read the story after from many past life of the Buddha. Well, whenever he was a human being, he always lived such as ẩn sĩ là gì?
Hermit.
Yeah, in Himalaya mountain. Could you comment about that?
Please repeat the question.
When we read about the Bodhisattva's lives, and we find that in numerous lives, he was a hermit staying in Himalaya mountains. Would you please comment about this?
What for? Why did he do that?
I don't know, but I think he prevent akusala did from the human life.
You see, so that Buddha heard the teachings of the other Buddha, right? Before becoming a Buddha, the Bodhisattva has heard the teachings from the Buddha, right? What about
when the Bodhisattva, before he became a Buddha, even before he became a Bodhisattva, he listened first to the previous Buddha. So he listened to the previous Buddha and he made a resolve, and he became a Bodhisattva and developed all the paramis, all the great perfections, until his last life, when he could develop insight and become fully enlightened to become the Sammasambuddha. So when he listened to the Buddha before, what did the Buddha before teach him?
I don't know. I have no idea about this.
Exactly like Buddha. This Buddha taught exactly the same.
About realities, seeing, hearing, like, dislike, all the different realities. We're talking about the realities which are conditioned and not self at the present moment. So this is what he had to hear in order to become a Bodhisattva and in order to develop all the paramis.
From hearing the teachings, the Bodhisattva knew that it's so very difficult. It would take quite a long, long time to be able to discern or enlighten the truth of what he had heard. So by understanding this, like we now has heard the teaching, is it easy to directly understand what the Buddha taught about reality right now as seeing, arising and falling away now? If we understand that it takes quite a long time to understand this, to be able, what would we do in that life? Not just to do anything to hope to enlighten, like sitting and walking, but by knowing that all kinds of akusala and wholesomeness cannot understand this, even seeing is right now. Ignorance blind the truth of seeing which arises and falls away now. So it's not other way at all. That's why he knew about the parami, that without the parami, the development of wholesomeness, no way to have less and less ignorance and attachment, which always blind each moment. now. That's why Bodhisattva means that who would like to become enlightened and never have changed his mind. Are we now Bodhisattva? There are three kinds of Bodhisattva. Please, Kunina.
Like we discussed before, the Bodhisattva who has so much accumulated wisdom that he becomes a Sammasambuddha. But also, when it is a lesser degree, the silent Buddha or Pacheka Buddha, who understands the truth but does not proclaim that to the world, he is not able to do that like the in the same way as the Sammasambuddha. And then we have Savaka, or learners or listeners, who understand the truth and will become enlightened. And now we all have to begin to listen, because you spoke about that you are a beginner, but actually most of us really are beginners. So simply learn more about seeing now, hearing now, and thinking. And seeing is not the same as thinking about all the people here, or the table, or the glasses, but seeing only experiences, visible object. But it is really not easy for us at all, since we accumulated so much ignorance and attachment. And it, as Ajahn says time and again, it will take so many lives, a long, long time, but it is good to be patient in this way, to listen over and over again. And Ajahn said, if we don't discuss Dhamma like we do now, we have such a precious opportunity to do that, then we think about many silly things like the conventional world and experiences in meditation, which is only thinking about ideas which are not realities. But then we forget about reality now and the seeing now. So we can't hear enough of that.
And I have a question for you. If why did the Buddha not tell all his followers and all his listeners to go and live in the mountain as a hermit? Why did he talk about seeing and hearing and different realities, no matter they were monks, nuns, lay people, kings, servants? Why didn't he tell them all to leave their lifestyle and tell them all to go and live in the mountain? Why didn't he tell Ananda to go and live in the mountain and cut himself off from people? Why did he talk about the meaning of solitude or the meaning of living alone as being the understanding at this moment of seeing or hearing or whatever appears in life? Wouldn't it have been simpler to just say to everyone, oh, just go and live in the mountain or in a cave and all problems will be solved? Why didn't he say that?
I actually agree with your approach about the most important is understanding about reality, but I keep thinking on that question about why so many his past life he always lived as a monk in the Himalaya mountain. Now I change my answers. Is that I think he realized. I think he recognized that the dangerous of yeah. Of akusaladis in the common life.
If we go and live in a cave or in a mountains, Can there be akusala arising?
Sure.
When his attendant Meghia kept saying he wished to leave the company of monks and go and live in the mango grove, and the Buddha kept saying, it's not a good idea, don't go, don't go. And then he went and he was overwhelmed by fear and difficulties. Is that the right way? Doesn't it depend on our different accumulations? Like some people live one kind of lifestyle and others live another lifestyle. But for all of us, there's seeing, there's hearing, there's like, there's dislike. So the Buddha taught everyone, no matter what their inclinations. He didn't say, copy my lifestyle and leave your family, leave your friends. He said, understand reality as it is, no matter what the inclinations, no matter what the tendencies. So no matter whether a king or a servant or a monk, there can be development of understanding of reality at this very moment. And the reason is that the reality at this moment, seeing now, hearing now, has already been conditioned. What's the point of thinking of another situation, a better place, a better time, when actually reality is already conditioned and can be known now? And seeing now, or seeing in the mountain, is just seeing. It's not my seeing or a special seeing. It's just seeing, no matter where it arises.
All right. I don't know if it would help to mention this, but we know that at the time he became Bodhisattva, at the time he made the vow to become a future Buddha, he had already developed understanding to the extent where he was capable of becoming enlightened in that lifetime. So had he not made the vow to become Bodhisattva, he would have become enlightened in that lifetime. Your question pertains to the period after he made the vow. So nothing to do with the development of his understanding up to the time he made the vow, when he could have become enlightened. The reason he then had the inclination to live many lives as a hermit was to do not with developing understanding per se, but with developing the qualities that are necessary to become self-enlightened Buddha in his final lifetime. And that is the perfections, the different qualities that are known as the perfections.
It means that depend on his tendency. Yeah, his habit of...
Yeah, partly on his tendencies, yes.
Did the Buddha ask the person who came to see him? Did he ask the person who came to see him? Not at all. In the Tipitaka, in Sutta, did Buddha ask a question?
When people came to see him, did he ask them any questions?
Yes, he did, but for several...
Okay, yeah. What the question is?
The question?
Yes.
For example, if you went to see the Buddha, what would the Buddha ask you?
Oh, what did he ask in Tipitaka? Many sutta all about the question that he asked the person about what? Did he say anything? Is there any question for that person to consider to answer the right thing? So could you remember what the Buddha asked the person who came to see him?
Actually, I don't remember because when I read a sutta,
That's why you follow the other's word. The question is seeing permanent?
He didn't ask the person who visited him. He didn't say, do you live in a cave or do you live on the mountain? He said, now, is seeing permanent? Is that which is seen permanent? Is it self or not self? Can it be controlled or not controlled? All about reality at this moment.
So what would you answer? That is seeing right now. What would the answer be? What would you say?
Yes.
What is seeing permanent? Seeing is not permanent.
Yes.
So seeing is not you.
Yes.
Can it be yours? Can seeing which arises and falls away be you or yours?
No.
Not at all. And did he say anything for that person to understand better and better about seeing so that there is less and less ignorance and attachment to seeing? Otherwise, there must be always ignorance to whatever arises and appears and cling to it as self or I. And he didn't say to anyone that go to this place, to another, or that place, sitting or standing or walking at all. But anyone who came to see him, just talk about realities to be known, clearer and clearer, to be conditioned for higher understanding, which can condition direct understanding of whatever appears, which no one knows when there will be. Moment of being aware with right understanding of that which is appearing as what the Buddha taught, that person has heard. But never change from understanding seeing at moment of seeing, otherwise you would be lost of his teaching. One must be very truthful to the truth. Seeing is not self. That's what it's the truth, and Buddha had enlightened, and he taught everyone about whatever appears now. Hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, like, dislike, whatever, they are all hidden. If no one hears the teachings of the Buddha, there cannot be understanding of whatever appears at all. So the best thing in one's life is listening, understanding the teachings about reality right now, because it can be object of understanding. If this moment is not the object of understanding, what else could be? The past one has gone completely, absolutely, never to return, and the future one hasn't come yet. So only that which now appears is the object of understanding. If there is no development of understanding, no hearing, no considering, developing parami, it's impossible to have less ignorance and attachment. So if one wouldn't forget right understanding develops among akusla, wholesomeness, ignorance. Because as soon as seeing has fallen away, there is ignorance and attachment like now, no understanding, and it's still me, I who see.
So what is important to consider is what the Buddha taught, not what he did, not what he did before he became enlightened or after he became enlightened, not what the monks of that time were doing when they listened to the Buddha, but what he said was important to know and understand. So we forget this. We read the suttas and we read about how quiet the assembly of monks were and how peaceful they were and how they had attained jhanas and so forth. But we are not paying attention to what the Buddha is teaching, to what he says needs to be understood, because that's what is important.
And what's the way to understand whatever appears now? What is the way to understand what appears now as it is?
Listening, considering.
Not by doing anything at all. That's why, because realities are very difficult and so subtle to be known, Buddha taught for 45 years about what? About each moment in life, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. While one hears about seeing only, seeing is not self, that's not enough. Seeing arises and falls away, that's not enough. That's why he taught for 45 years by different means, like seeing is just the element, a tattoo, like hardness. As hardness cannot be anything else, it's conditioned to arise to be hard. So seeing is conditioned to arise just to see. No one there, no one can do anything. Just learn to understand better and better, little by little. It's not I, because of the Buddha's teachings in details, by way of tattoo, elements, by way of ayatana, the meeting place, and by way of paticca-samuppada, dependent origination, and by way of aricca-sacca, the absolute truth. It's now, at this moment. Otherwise, he wouldn't teach for 45 years. Is it a long time? 45 years about seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, like this, right? Whatever is now, which now is just like at the bottom of the sea, under the sea. It's not seen. Whether we talk about that which see and it's seen, it arises and falls away. The self cannot understand to that degree. It just begin to learn to know about. Even at moment of birth, no one is there at all. Only absolute realities conditioned to arise and continue on in succession from moment to moment by many, many conditions. That's why he taught about conditions too. Abhidhamma, the same book, is about condition, the last book. Because if there is no understanding of reality right now, how can there be understanding of condition for its arising, or more and more about it, in order to have less and less clinging and ignorance?
In the Heart Sutra, I think it's in the North Buddhism. Mahayana. Before that, I remember this story, not very detailed, but I remember one story at the Buddha time that one king on the bed when very sickness. Then Ananda came and did him about the seeing is not you, hearing is not you, and also five khandhas is not you. And then the king deep thinking about that. Contemplate about that. And then king, during that time, his body is very painful, but he's feel he's okay with that, and very easy and let's say easy to pass away, to get good condition for the next life. Back to the Heart Sutra, I see a little bit similar that the deep contemplate in the emptiness of the five khandhas, and not just five khandhas, it including the visible object, hearing, and also the nama and rupas, the emptiness of that, and then they overcome the suffering. Yeah, please have to comment a little bit about that. If the some way they have the practicing. Yeah.
So forget about the word practicing and never mind the source, but the point is that whoever came to see the Buddha, whether it was, or if he visited someone who was sick, he didn't say anything about cave or living on a mountain. He talked about seeing, he talked about hearing, he talked about different realities which are impermanent, arise by conditions, not self, and painful bodily feeling. It just lasts for a moment, not my pain. It's just for a moment, conditioned reality, result of past karma, and then gone. And afterwards, moments of understanding and awareness, or aversion and ignorance as usual. But by understanding more that whatever arises in life, during our life, is conditioned and not belonging to anyone. It's a way to gradually understand that there are just dharmas now, no need to go another place, no need to think about practice, because as soon as there's the idea of practice, it's not understanding, seeing as conditioned and anatta. It's the idea of I can do something, I can change the reality, I can make awareness arise. So this is why the Buddha taught that this is the wrong path, the path of I can do.
So about this story, at that time, that person already has the quite high development of the understanding, and just a little bit more teaching than
the person who the Buddha taught at that time. He could appreciate that it's true that at this moment seeing arises by conditions, not my seeing. Hearing is just an element, a dhatu, as Ajahn mentioned, not my hearing. It arises by conditions, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, bodily painful feeling or pleasant bodily feeling. They're just conditioned dharmas, not of any importance. Nothing to be attached to or upset about, because they're just elements that rise for a moment and fall away instantly. So we can begin to consider and understand, intellectually at least, whether this is right or not. But for that person, then they could understand that it's really the truth. And it's that understanding which conditions calm and all the other wholesome qualities you mentioned. But it has to be the understanding that they are dharmas, not in anyone's control. No idea for that person of practicing or selecting an object or trying to concentrate at all. No idea that they must sit first or have someone shouting at them or anything else like this. Just talking about realities and understanding at this moment different elements, different realities, each one anatta. So this is why there has to be the hearing and considering again and again about the different realities in life. Otherwise there will always be strange ideas about finding the Buddha nature or going to practice in another place or something like this. I'd just like to ask our new friend who we haven't met before how you heard about the discussion and how this sounds to you, whether this sounds interesting or not.
Thank you. We were at Bakha Monastery a few days ago, so that's where we first heard about it. I just live locally, just around the corner. And I'm not a Buddhist. I have very little understanding of, well, theoretical understanding of what the Buddha said, but just being here and being with you all, in any moment it all makes sense. And I've had a teacher for 30 years. I no longer have a teacher. And one of the things that I learnt from being with him, and perhaps more importantly, being with a large number of people who were interested in why are we here, how to live, was the very deep and beautiful understanding that I think what you call the Sangha is, if not perhaps the most important aspect of how we understand. And so I'm finding at the moment my present experience here is that because I didn't come here to get anything, I came here just out of curiosity, and because I know from many, many meetings and discussions and wanting to understand that in those meetings and discussions, then understanding comes. And that it appears that we are doing something, but I think what you've been pointing to is my understanding too, that what we're doing is just being here and doing our best not to try to get something or to go somewhere, but rather... So I have a question, because I the question is understanding. What is understanding?
It's ignorant about whatever appears now. It's not the ignorance. For example, there is seeing, no one knows about it at all. So that is ignorance. But when someone knows about that, that is right understanding. For example, what is seeing? There is seeing. What is seeing? The ignorant cannot understand seeing. Even if there is seeing, but right understanding understands seeing, because there is seeing right now. And that which can be understood is only that which now appears. The past has gone. You cannot follow to understand it because it's completely gone, absolutely, never to return each moment. And the future hasn't come yet. So the only thing that can be object of understanding is that which appears now. No matter seeing, hearing, touching, thinking, feeling, memory, whatever in life is conditioned, because no one can make it arise. No one can make seeing arise at all. The blind cannot see. So what is conditions for seeing? Understanding understands. Ignorant cannot.
So in other words, it's understanding the truth of life. And as you mentioned, there is being now, but there has to be the understanding of exactly what is true or what is real now, because usually everyone knows that there's only the present moment and there's only living now, but it's quite meaningless. So the question is, what is real now as opposed to what is make-belief now? What is real as opposed to what is only a concept or fantasy? We know it when we're sleeping and we wake up that it was a dream world, a fantasy world. It wasn't real. But actually, even when we're awake, most of the time we're lost in daydreams and ideas. We take the table for being real. We take the microphone or the flowers for being real. We take people around for being real. But actually, at this moment, there's only seeing, which sees what is visible, and then afterwards there's thinking about flowers and drinks and people. At the moment of touching, it's just hardness or heat or cold that's touched, but instantly there's an idea of, I touch a table. So it's the understanding of what is real as opposed to what is imagined, which is really the heart of the Buddha's teachings. And that understanding understands that each of those realities now arises because of particular conditions, falls away instantly, doesn't last for an instant, and is not in anyone's control. So that's the nitty-gritty of what the understanding is.
Thank you, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Because before we had no idea what ignorance was. And then Ajahn said, understanding overcomes ignorance, but ignorance of what? We had no idea. But seeing, like seeing now, we thought that we never had any idea about seeing, but it is conditioned by visible, that which can be seen, visible object, which impinges on eye sense, which is another reality. And because of those conditions, seeing can arise. So it's so useful to discuss more about seeing and hearing all those realities the Buddha taught.
And when we learn more, there is more conditions for even a moment of seeing to arise, not just to.
You may wonder why we talk about seeing so much. Well, seeing is representative of what is arising at the present moment. But there are other realities arising too. There's hearing, and there's thinking about what has been seen and heard also, and also thinking other things. So the point is that the only thing that can be directly understood is what is arising and appearing at the present moment. So the truths about life that you mentioned, what is life or that sort of thing, it all comes back to understanding more about the present moment, the reality of the present moment.
Perhaps I could ask you a question, something I've been thinking about recently. And if we go to the sensation of touch, now I can reach out and touch the table, but it seems to me that the chances that I am in the present and that touching is happening now is dependent upon whether any concept or idea I have of table or what it might feel like before I touch it and so on and so on and so on is not there, is left. And it occurred to me that there's more happening than me touching the table. As I do that, the table is also touching me. So there's a what do you call it, a codependent arising? There's so much more happening than the idea that it's me seeing an object in some way or other. I don't know whether that makes sense.
Your question, what is understanding? It could also be asked, what does understanding understand? And the answer, as we've been discussing, is anything that is real at the present moment. So we need to discuss more about the realities other than just seeing and visible object, because some things that we might take for realities are in fact not realities. As you put it, when I lean forward and touch the table, so much is happening. That may be so, but the experiencing of hardness at that moment is real. Regardless of the story we have leading up to that moment of experiencing, or the story around it, just as this moment of seeing now and the object being experienced is real, regardless of any ideas we might have about how that comes to be, which is thinking, which is another reality. And it may seem that different realities are arising simultaneously, but in fact, in terms of the consciousness that experiences, it's one at a time.
And it's not a matter of trying to know the reality. For example, it's not a matter of leaning forward and touching it and trying to experience it, because that's a lot of thinking and idea of I trying to do something again. But just at this moment of touching, without thinking about it, there is hardness experienced at this moment. So there are two kinds of realities in brief. There are those realities which can experience an object, such as seeing or hearing or touching. And there are those kinds of realities which cannot experience anything, such as hardness, visible object or sound. They can be experienced, but they don't experience anything themselves. So the hardness arises and falls away all the time. But if there are conditions for touching to touch it, the touching experiences that hardness, but the hardness itself doesn't experience anything. And the reason we learn about these two kinds of realities, those realities which can experience something and those realities which can't experience anything, is to really be clear that they are just different phenomena, different realities arising and passing away, not my seeing or hearing or touching or liking or disliking. And the hardness or the visible object or the sound, it's not a table or flowers. It's just different realities arising and falling away. Thinking is another kind of reality which can experience an object. But when it's thinking about flowers or table, at that time it's thinking about an idea, a concept. Does that help?
That helps, thank you.
Very good questions.
Can anyone change the truth of reality? Can anyone change the truth of reality?
For example, seeing now, it arises. It arises because there are conditions for seeing. Can you or I or anyone change seeing now, make it anything different?
No.
So the truth of whatever appears now is what?
Whatever appears.
Not permanent at all. Not at will. Not anyone's control.
Right, and absolutely.
So is there self or I? Is there I or self?
Not really. No.
What do you mean then?
I imagine there is. but no.
One has to be sure by considering about the truth.
Yes.
That which arises and falls away in split seconds never come back. No more to find it, no matter in what world. Never again. Only once in lifetime. In samsara. Like seeing now is not yesterday seeing and it's not tomorrow seeing.
Is that also true with the idea that I am I, that I am myself? That arises and falls away and is impermanent?
right or wrong?
It would seem from my experience that I am not permanent.
But seeing now arise such a false way, where's you? Seeing, which has fallen away. When it doesn't fall away yet, it's I see. But after it has fallen away, where's the I?
It's not there.
Each moment is like that. That's why we learn to understand little by little in order to be conditioned for direct awareness of the arising and falling away now. Otherwise, the idea of self is still there, no matter what method you try.
So I think, as you were saying, when you mentioned the word method, that there is no practice, there's no technique, there's nothing really to do but to understand.
How can there be technique to get rid of ignorance?
Exactly, it doesn't make sense.
On the other hand, we can't think the way to the truth about things by ourselves, because our accumulated ignorance and wrong views would lead us astray very quickly. So there has to be the hearing of the truth about the way things are. And as I said earlier, not just once, but many times, and there has to be the reflection on that. But just getting back to your question about the idea of I or self, that's a moment of thinking. The moments of thinking arise and fall away. The object of that moment of thinking is the idea, which is not itself a reality like the thinking.
So even the thinking, like the seeing or hearing, is just another conditioned reality. It seems like it's my thinking, but it's actually just a moment of thinking for a moment and then gone. So even the thinking of I am or I will or I can do is just a moment of thinking not belonging to anyone. It's very subtle, but it's good that you can appreciate it.
And that can be the beginning of understanding the great virtues of Buddha. Otherwise, seem nothing. Just talk and tell someone to do something. That's not his teaching at all. That person cannot be the enlightened one at all.
And understanding about these different realities, this is the beginning of understanding what is meant by Buddha's nature, because without Buddha's teaching, we would have no idea at all that these different realities like seeing and hearing are not mine or don't belong to anyone. So because of his great wisdom, he could teach about all kinds of realities and in great detail and from many different aspects. So this is the beginning of being able to appreciate that wisdom or knowledge that is not the same as anyone else's.
That's why each word should be studied very carefully. Otherwise, there cannot be understanding of that at all. For example, just the word nature, what is it?
The word that comes to my mind is essence, is the core of something, the its isness, if you like. But I haven't thought about it.
Is it permanent?
Different realities have a different nature or characteristic. Sarah mentioned earlier that some realities experience objects, like consciousness experiences an object, the visible object, hearing consciousness experiences sound, and other realities cannot experience anything like sound itself. It can only be the object of the experience. There's a difference in nature between the reality that experiences and the reality that cannot experience anything. Yeah, so essence is one synonym for nature or characteristic. Inherent characteristic would be another term.
And we could say that whether we're talking about the Buddha's life or the life, our lives, whatever life one's talking about, that actually in truth there is no person there. There are just different moments of consciousness, one after the other. Moments of seeing, moments of hearing, moments of thinking, moments of like, moments of dislike, each one lasting for an instant and changing all the time. And this is the nature of life, that it just goes on, different realities arising and falling away, and in truth, no one there at all.
So, do you like nature?
Do I like nature?
Nature.
Are you using nature in the same way as we've just been talking about?
See, if there is no studying at all, there cannot be the understanding of nature correctly.
Hmm. Do I like nature? I mean, the way you're talking about it, it's completely fascinating. And what makes me want to learn more about it. But
what do you think about nature before you listen to the teachings?
I already had some understanding of what Sarah, yeah, it was...
Before that.
Sorry?
Before that.
Before that. No, I had no understanding.
See, there is always ignorance of every word and everything without understanding the truth of reality right now. Even just one word.
So, what is the nature of seeing?
The nature of seeing.
It sees now. See? Ignorance is there. When its understanding is not ignorance.
I was going to say that seeing is, and it seems like exactly what you've been saying, but seeing is a momentary experience or a momentary, call it action, but it's momentary, and then it happens again and happens again.
Is the nature of seeing different from the nature of hearing?
Not essentially, no. There appear to be differences.
Can seeing hear?
No.
So what's the nature of seeing and the nature of hearing? Different quality.
Yeah.
Different,
yes,
characteristic. Yeah. Mm. But they are real. But they are not the same.
No.
That's what seeing experience, and what does hearing experience?
Right, yes, I understand. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that essentially they are experiences, if you like, that appears that I am having, but that's not actually what's going on, I think. But they are momentary, and they arise and they fall, and they arise and they fall. So in that way, seeing and hearing are the same, but they have different...
In what way that they are the same?
Well, in that I don't do them. They...
And also, as you said, they are both momentary, so they have that characteristic in common.
Yes, right.
But they each have a nature, a characteristic that is unique.
I have this experience sometimes, particularly in nature, the other kind of nature, you know, when there isn't so much interference from, you know, living in a city and so on, and the noise and whatever, that I am hearing, for example, if I'm in a forest, I'm hearing, but also hearing is happening. That, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, it's not I'm being heard, but there's a unity in the experience of hearing, which is not just me hearing, but hearing is happening. And I can't say it's the trees that are hearing, but maybe it is the trees are hearing, I don't know.
When it's not seeing, what is it?
Ignorance.
And thinking. One lives in the world of thinking all day long. After seeing, there's thinking. After hearing, there's thinking. So it's not seeing, hearing is thinking. Arising and falling away by conditions shouldn't be considered and studied more and more instead of going somewhere and sit and know nothing at all.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, I liked your earlier conversation about meditation. But thinking, sorry, to ask about thinking, my experience of thinking is thoughts arising. It doesn't seem that I am thinking, but thoughts are arising. Is that right?
Without any experience at all, can there be any thought?
No, no. So what is present when thoughts arise? How are the thoughts recognized?
At different moments, seeing is present and visible object is present too.
Oh, okay, so we're talking about seeing visible and invisible objects. Yeah, okay.
Seeing is real, visible object is real, and seeing cannot see hardness, softness, sound. Whatever it can is only visible object that which can be seen. Among all realities, there's only one reality that can be seen, and it now appears.
Yes, I like that.
And at a moment of, for example, thinking about unity in the forest, or thinking about how the thinking just comes, the thinking at that moment is real, and the thinking arises and falls away instantly. But the idea that's thought about unity in the forest or special experience, it's just an idea. So the idea is not real. It doesn't arise and fall away. It's just that which is thought about.
Right.
So seeing is real, visible object is real, hearing is real, sound is real, thinking is real. But the idea, like when we're asleep, the dream, is not real.
Or the memory of it, or the...
Well, it's because of memory. There's a memory at each moment in life. It arises with each, we call it citta, each moment of experiencing, each moment of consciousness. And because of memory of what has been seen, heard, smelt, tasted and touched, there come to be these ideas and dreams and fantasies.
Sure. Right, right.
So is there anything and anyone now?
I would have to say no.
Why?
Because when I think about that, I appear to be...
So it means that there is someone or thing?
Yes. Well, interesting. I guess when I said I have to say no, I want to say no, but I don't know why I'm saying no, to
See,
be honest.
Ignorance again and again.
Absolutely.
And again. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because at a moment of seeing, the seeing is just seeing, so not I am seeing, just a moment of seeing. So at that moment of seeing, no one there, because there's only that kind of experiencing. And at a moment of hearing, just hearing, no one there. At a moment of thinking, it's just thinking. So by understanding more about the different realities of life at this moment, this is a way to understand that actually there are just these different realities arising and falling away. And the idea that there are people or there is I at this moment is just an idea.
So, what is a moment?
this is something that I have not exactly struggled with, but to, as many people have said, many wise people have said, there are moments, and life is made up of an endless number of moments. We might say there are a succession of moments, and then one seems to come before another, and that there is cause and effect and so on, but that may not actually be true at all. So a moment seems to be a way that we have to talk about an experience, that's something that arises and falls. I think in the end there are no moments. It doesn't make sense, but I'm not quite sure why.
So better consider by yourself and hear more by such words that bring about understanding.
That's absolutely true.
If nothing arises, can there be a moment?
It would seem not. There must be a moment for something to arise and fall. Yeah.
Not at all. So what's the world? What is the world?
Most of the time it's an idea I have, or a lot of ideas I have. But the world is also just something that arises in any moment, right?
If nothing arises, there is no world. So if there is nothing arising at all, there is no world at all. But whenever our reality arises, it's a world.
Right.
At moment of seeing is a world. At moment of thinking is another world. In a world, in a moment only.
So some things that we've been talking about are real, and some things we've been talking about are ideas, are concepts. So seeing is real at this moment, and the object being experienced by seeing consciousness. And when there's touching of the body sense, say where we are sitting or whatever, that is hardness being experienced, that is real. But the idea of a moment, there's no reality called a moment that can be directly experienced. So it's a concept about the shortness of the arising of realities.
Is this because we're bringing time into things, that a moment actually has to relate in some way to the beginning and an end of something, a time passing? And
well, it's just a concept. Time is a concept.
Yeah. Mm.
So a moment is one of the ways we use to describe a span of time, a very brief span of time.
Right.
Can ignorance be eradicated?
No.
So who's the Buddha? Was there a Buddha? If not...
Yes.
If not... Even the word reality cannot be heard.
Right.
Dhamma cannot be heard.
So who is the Buddha?
The one who eradicated ignorance through the development of right understanding, through becoming fully enlightened, and taught the path or the way to us. Taught the way to develop ignorance, which is
to eradicate
ignorance by developing understanding of the realities of life, as we're discussing. So there
so
is
the
a way,
is, yeah,
otherwise he wouldn't have taught it.
Right.
So when it's not the word of truth, it's not the word of the Buddha, no matter who speaks.
So the Buddha is a universality, is a... I mean, he was...
What do you mean by that again?
Well, well, because I have listened, you know, and been in the presence of many people who...
Not the words of the Buddha.
Well, they sound very much like your words, or like the words... Or
it must be about now, when it's the word of
yes.
the Buddha.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because would it be true to say that it's, I guess, ignorance to think that the words only come from the Buddha, that there are manifestations of Buddha-ness, if you like, in the world today, people who we can have conversations with and discussions with, who can reveal or show this Buddha nature, this true reality?
I think that what we can say is that the Buddha became enlightened and taught the path, and we can study and consider what the path is, what the nature of realities are at this moment, and we can, through the development of understanding, test out what is right and what is not right. And it's not a matter of what someone claims or declares, but the teaching has to be about, as we've been discussing, understanding what is true now. So if someone talks about Buddha nature or universality or essence, well, what is it? Is it seeing now? Is it hearing now? Is it thinking now? And it is the development of understanding that will know or will prove or will lead to more confidence in what is true and right. So I think that whatever we hear or consider, one has to question what it means and what is the reality of it at this moment. So this is why Ajahn was asking Gern, what is Buddha nature? What do you mean by that? Or what is universality? Because otherwise we talk about grand ideas, but what can be actually known at this moment? Hardness is real. Universality is an idea.
No, that's good. And what happens for me sometimes in exchanges, conversations, or just being with people is what seems to be the same as has happened in similar situations in the past, but it has a very simple true truth and presence to it. Not making myself very clear. It's not easy to talk about. I mean, all I can say really, I guess, is that's why I feel very, very blessed and very happy to be in conversation here and to be with you, because there is something here and something that happens in many moments that is true, is real.
And like you said before, you agreed that seeing now, it's not actually your seeing or my seeing, it is just a reality. And visible object is just that which is seen. And the core of the teachings and the subtlety of the teaching is that even though these realities might sound quite simple, like seeing and hearing, but to really understand that they are anatta, not self, is very subtle, because there's always the idea of I can do, I can control life, I can practice, I can somehow hasten the path, or I can be aware more often. So to just understand, and with detachment, that whatever arises now is by condition, it's not in anyone's control, is very, very subtle. Wouldn't you say, Vincent?
Sorry, I was
about practice and understanding dhammas as anatta and being subtle. Being subtle to really understand that no one can do anything or follow any method or practice at this moment.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I did some practice for a few years, and the goal of the practice was to have more awareness and understanding. But about how subtle, because when there is a desire to try to do the practice, it just doesn't feel right. Because it's there's a feeling of trying to force something, and what's behind that forcing, that's just ignorance.
Yeah.
Right.
That's been my experience over.
Yeah, thank you. That's also been my experience over many years of having practices which have goals and ideas that if I do this long enough, then this will happen or that will happen. And yeah, but I learnt a lot from trying to do this, because even though I seemed to be having experiences of what I wanted to happen, they weren't true. They were just my ideas, and that somehow or other that if I do this, then this will happen. And but also in my practice and in just sitting, which I no longer do because I don't think it's necessary, meditation, there were some very beautiful times, benefits. I think I learned something, yes.
No understanding.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it beautiful?
Well, it was helpful. Maybe beautiful is not the right word. Good point.
So when you say it was useful, like you said at the very beginning, when this, you don't have any expectations when you come here, because when one's trying to get something out of it or having expectations, there are bound to be disappointments. Mm-hmm. So what may seem useful or beautiful may not really be.
So this is the beginning of what?
It seems that there are countless beginnings.
It's the beginning of understanding.
Mm. Right.
And it develops when there's more understanding from hearing, considering, and discussing.
Right.
Because they are all mankala, the blessings, okay, which will bring more wholesome moments.
Thank you. It also seems that just being together brings understanding. I mean, in other teachings, it might be talked about as transmission or something, but I don't really know what's happening. But it seems that just being without trying to do or get.
I think we should distinguish between the fact that there has to be the hearing of what is real and what is true.
Okay.
And just being with other people, which per se, there's nothing in it. We're with people all day, actually.
Mm.
So it's a question of what is the topic of discussion that's important.
Right.
And the understanding of the other people with whom we are having the discussion.
Yes.
Or the interest.
Mm.
But not being together per se.
That's an interesting one, because I guess you can have the idea that I am here with a particular intention and that person is also here with a particular intention, and therefore there is no need to speak. But those are just ideas, and we don't find out until we speak, until we hear, until we listen, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
That also could be said, but what I was more getting to was that if we don't hear about things first, the way things are, and then having thought about it, ask more questions or clarify our thinking by voicing it to someone else in the form of a question or comment or whatever, then understanding cannot develop further.
So are we talking about hearing ourselves as well as others as being important?
It depends on the level of understanding. If we don't really have any idea about things, but a lot of our own ideas, then we shouldn't listen to ourselves.
To them. Right.
So it's better to be familiar with what the Buddha taught, so that when one is hearing things from someone else, one has some yardstick against which to evaluate what is being heard.
Mm.
And the Buddha praised very highly good friendship, and he taught that good friendship is association with understanding of what is true and real. So being with those who can encourage or help us to understand about more about what is true in life. And of course, in this sense, the best friend or the best association is with the Buddha and his teachings. So whatever will lead us to understand more about the truth of life is the good friendship. And perhaps that's also what you were pointing to a little bit when one's with others who are also interested to understand more about what is true and what is important in life. It's a rare or special opportunity.
No, it is. Thank you.